My name is Mary Foltz, and today is June 12th, 2019. I'm here with Darlene Stokes in Hudson, New York, for an oral history that will be a part of the Oral History Summer School Archive. The reason why I know Darlene is that we're classmates in the Oral History Summer School, and she has, I'm grateful that she's agreed to be a part of this process today. Darlene, would you be willing to introduce yourself?
Hi, my name is Darlene Stokes.
So I'm going to start by asking you to tell me about a person that matters to you.
A person that matters to me. I have quite a few people that matter to me. But the person who comes to mind most right now, in this moment, would be my youngest godson. He was 6 months just this past Monday on the 10th. So he was just born in December, premature. And I was at his birth. His mom, 46 years old, had a baby, called me in July. She said, "Big sis, I didn't get my period. I think this is odd. What do you think?" I said, "You should go to the doctor, but before you go, go to the pharmacy and get three, not one, three pregnancy tests and take them all and then call me back." And she did. And she was high risk. She was seeing someone who was not living in New York City. And I said, "I will go with you to the doctor because to be high risk and to have to go to the doctors by yourself is unheard of." And that was my summer commitment. So I went to the doctor with her like every once a week, sometimes twice a week. We took classes together. And this is a friend who I befriend about maybe 4 or 5 years ago. She was a colleague. Just wouldn't go away. And we chatted each other up. And she experienced a death. Her husband passed away. And I was consoling her because I understood what grief was like. In fact, it was her mom who died. And then shortly after her husband died, he had colon cancer. So she had these deaths that were rapid, you know, right behind one another. And we just became good friends. And then she got pregnant. And I'm big sis and she is baby sis. So her little darling, who we call, his name is Sterling, is my newest heartbeat. He makes me laugh. He's such a dear. In fact, the day my father was taken off of the machines that he was on, the life support, I was babysitting Sterling. And I had committed to caring for him before my father had this last episode. So I had gone to see my dad to say my goodbyes and to sit with him. He was unconscious, but I didn't want to not be with Sterling because I had made that commitment and I felt like my dad would understand. And he was transitioning out, but this baby was here. And, you know, the hope is he'll live as long as my dad or longer. And so I sat with him. My brother called and said, that they had taken him off life support. So Sterling he's a sweetheart. And so is his mom. And, you know, it wasn't my intention to have a godchild at 59. In fact, I said, "I don't want any more godchildren. Don't ask me, I'll be play aunt. But I don't want to be a godmother because I go deep. I'm not the godmother who calls on birthdays and Christmas. You know, I go to recitals and sporting events. I'm committed." But I was at his birth. Like, how could I not be the godmother? So I, you know, I said to her a couple of weeks into his existence, I want you to reconsider. I think I'm going to take back. As I said to her, I don't want to be the godmother. I just don't want to be the godmother. I love you. I love him. I don't want to be the godmother. It's not what I want to do. I'm retired now. That's not what I want to do. And then I asked her, she was like, are you kidding? Please. So I'm godmother again. And it's a big role, but I'm up for it. Yeah, so he right now is probably one whom I think a lot about because I want him to be, we use the term free, and free from the standpoint of to be liberated in his thinking, to not be confined with being a black kid, not be confined with living in a world that's racist, and we don't want to raise him so that he is not free in his thinking. And so constantly reminding her and myself, and we do each other, that our parents did the best they could. And sometimes what they shared with us were things that they thought would keep us alive and keep us safe. But in order for children to be free and to really grab that, someone has to say, you have a right to be free. So if that means that when you are in the supermarket, I'm not snatching you up and telling you to be quiet. I'm just going to let you have a moment because that's what little people do. So, and it's quite interesting because, you know, we come from a tradition where it was clear that there were things in which that you did not do in public because you did not want to bring your family shame. And that's connected to slavery so that you would be safe. And so even though our parents didn't say that to us, those behaviors become a part of your DNA. Mm-hmm. And so you start behaving in that way. And you train your children, sometimes consciously, sometimes unconsciously. And so it's an ongoing kind of reminder. So I'll say this. So when I found out about this particular class, I had no idea where it was located. And in fact, I thought it was in Manhattan. I said, fine, I can go to Manhattan, Hudson. Yeah, it's probably on Hudson Street. I made up a Hudson Street in my head before I checked the map. And when I discovered that it was an hour and 37 minutes away, I said, okay, I can commute. Then that didn't work out in my head. I said, I'm going to miss the opportunity to get the full experience. So I arranged to get a room. And I didn't think through where I was going to be housed until I was actually driving up. And this is how one has to look at your history and being a black woman and making your way in a society that is not always friendly. So I'm driving up and I said, shit, where am I going? Will it be safe? Am I going to be in an environment where I'll have to be mindful of where I'm living? How many black people are going to be there, darling? You didn't even think about this. And then I had to remind myself that I'm free, that wherever I am, that's where I am. So if I'm one, two, then I will. I have a right to be there. But the fact that I have to think about that at 59, I know that's not what I want for Sterling. I don't want him to have to think about not that he has a right to be there, but he should know about the dangers that are still lurking. But he should know he has a right and not question that. So, I don't want to say a project, but I want to be a part of his rearing so that he is a free man in his mind and know that wherever he finds himself, he has a right to be. And yeah. So Sterling. Sterling has five names. I'm going to give them all to you if I can remember them. Sterling Ramsey Christian Spencer Jenkins. That's a lot.
Were there moments in your life when you did not feel free?
Oh, absolutely. Oh, absolutely. But my freedom is something in which that I've always was conscious of and worked on. But, oh, yeah, you can't be a black woman in New York City or in America and not have the restrictions placed on you in your mind. Or with, you know, society placing those restrictions on you. Oh, when I was in college, there were limits, you know. So there were times where I did not feel free, but I always made a point. I was always conscious of making sure that I was moving towards feeling free. So I have a right to be here. And so whenever I question whether or not I'm feeling free, I can hear Maya Angelou repeating what James Baldwin told her. The crown has already been paid for. You know, yeah. So whatever, it's already been paid for. That I have a right to exist as a human being. So I can go through as a woman and an American, but just as a human being, I have a right, as everyone else does. Not more than the next person, but no less either. A right to exist, to be flawed, to be complicated, to be silly, to be deep, to make mistakes, to exist as a human being. Because we are complicated. Our families are complicated. My sister who passed away in January, she and I share the same dad. And we did not become close until I was about 18. I met her when I was 18, and about maybe 10 years later, we started a relationship. So I sort of, we've been in a relationship for over 30 years, where we were considered to be close to one another. And she said to me, families are complicated. And I sometimes think they're overrated, darling. I said, and to some extent, I believe that when you think that your family, be they blood or not, should be everything to you, it is overrated. No human being should be burdened with being everything to anyone. Like, really? No, you must be something to yourself. And enough that it should sustain you, that if you are in relationships with other people, they should support that. But to make someone else responsible for your feeling whole is not fair. It just isn't. But it doesn't mean that if you're in relationship with someone that they should not do their part, because that's the whole point of being in relationship. But not totally your responsibility, but the commitment is I am responsible to you. So as best I can, I will love you and support you and be there for you, providing it does not get in the way of you being there for yourself. So you have to know when to say to a family member, that's not my responsibility. I love you. But you need to work that thing out by yourself. Yeah. And I don't have any, I'm not confused about that. Yeah. And so my siblings, they're really clear that Darlene is, I'm not carrying you. I will love you. I will be there for you. But you have a responsibility to yourself as I do to myself. Yeah. So, Yeah, I love the fact that families are complicated, but they can be liberating, and sometimes that liberation comes when you separate yourself from them. Yeah, sometimes you have to separate yourself from family, but I feel blessed that I have people who love me deeply and go out of their way to be supportive and to accept me as I am, you know. Sometimes very talkative, sometimes giving advice that people don't want to hear, sometimes really very blunt. My nephew said, "Aunt Darlene, she's like straight no chaser." I said, "That's right, about right." So let me tell you this story. So I mentioned to you before we start taping, I had two sisters who passed. So the sister that I grew up with, same household, same mother, same father, but the two of us raised by the same mother and stepmother. So we came of age together. We've known each other our entire existence. She is ill. And we have a friend that wants to, that needs a place to stay. And so my middle sister says, "You could, she can probably stay with Denise." So I said, "Somebody should talk to Denise, because sometimes, you know, she can just be a little, you know, she's not always nice." And she says, "That's not true." I said, "Let me tell you, Diane is emotional, my middle sister. She'll cry the drop of a hat. You can be a little mean. I just say it like it is." So we shared that with my nephew, and he said, my mom is a little emotional. Aunt Denise sometimes, you know, she says too much. But you just say it like it is. Straight, no chaser." I don't know if that's better or worse. But that's who I am. And I've come to terms with that, and I accept that. I don't, and that's okay. Yeah, sometimes I chew my tongue because you need to be quiet. But if you ask me my opinion, I'm going to tell you. I'm not going to lie to you. And hopefully my intention is to say it in a loving way, but I'm not going to be dishonest and tell you something that's not true, because I want you to be free. And part of being free is telling the truth. Yeah. So, I think that the person that I most the person that I tell the truth to the most is to myself. So I constantly ask myself, what am I really feeling right now? And is it okay to feel this way? And if the answer is yes, it's okay to feel this way, then I just write it out. So if it's sadness, then I'll just write it out. If it's joy, then I will allow myself to be joyful, even in the midst of family members deep in grief, because your grief is not necessarily going to be the same as mine. And I won't feel badly that I am celebrating when it's a time where there's sorrow. That is the thing that I like about myself, or one of the things that, your sadness is not going to necessarily become my sadness. But if I'm feeling sad, I'm sad. Yeah. Death has taught me, my experience with death, when my mother died in 1988, which seems like an eternity. I was real clear that nobody gets to stay. Everybody dies. No one stays. So that means that you must live your best life now, and know that your time will come. What will it look like when it's your time to leave? So live your best life. And the older I get, the more I realize that that is true. To be 59 years old, you have to come to terms with some things. And my intention is to live a long time, but to live a long time in my truth and to be free in my head. Yeah.
I'm curious about your relationships with your sisters. I'm wondering if you could talk about a day in the life in your childhood with the sister that you grew up with. What was that like living together? What was a day in the life of the sisters?
My sisters, and I'm just going to reference the two sisters that I grew up with, because most times when someone will ask about how many siblings do I have, I will generally say three, because I think about my two sisters and my brother. We grew up in the same household, separate from my siblings that live on Long Island and are my father's children, but not my mother's children. We were very close. And I would dare say, even in my sister's passing, I still feel close to her. Three girls, one boy growing up in a home where there's only one bathroom can be kind of challenging. My oldest sister, she had her own bedroom, and I shared with my middle sister or my brother as we were growing up. And the older we got, then it switched where my older sister had her own room and my brother had his own room. And then my middle sister and I, we shared a room. We had this thing where we would have our own friends, but then we would always come back together. She was 60 years old when she passed, so she was only 2 years older than I am. And my middle sister is 59. She's 60 now, so she was just, my middle sister is just 1 year older than I am. So we were very close. When we were children, my mother dressed us alike. You know, we had on pad leather shoes and, you know, some cute little dress with a hat. We didn't go to the same high school. We didn't have the same friends. We didn't have the same friends as adults either. So, and those are your friends. These are my friends. And you have my middle sister had her friends, although she's quite sensitive about everyone's friends being merged and intermingling. No, you must have your own friends. I know your friends, but your friends are not my friends. Yeah. I'm friendly with them, but they're not. I'm not calling them at night when I have an issue. They call you, you call them. So a day in the life is very typical. I grew up in New York City in the Bronx, and we lived in a tenement building, and it was a four-story walk-up. So we had chores that we did with my mom on Saturdays. Every Saturday, we got up early. We went to the laundromat. Two of us would go wash clothes, and two would go to the supermarket to buy groceries. And then we'd come home and, you know, do chores, listen to music while we were doing chores. Typical urban, listening to Soul Train singing. That was Saturday. Then Sunday we'd get up and go to church. You know, go to church and then come home, have dinner, play outside. A lot of games outside. Handball, stickball, scullies, hotscotch. We were not middle class. We were working poor, my parents, but we had a comfortable existence. Yeah, and I always felt loved by my mom and my dad, but especially my mom. Yeah, we didn't come from that family where everybody said, I love you, love you, love you. That didn't come until many, many years later, where now we don't hang up the phone or leave without saying I love you. But I don't recall my mother having, you know, I don't recall her saying those words to us on a daily basis. But I never, I always felt loved. Yeah, always felt loved and special. I look a lot like my mom, so they used to call me Little Mary. My mother's name was Mary. Yeah, my mother's name is Mary, so they would call me Little Mary. And, yeah, so, yeah, it wasn't ideal, you know. Sometimes it was just, there was struggle, but, you know, we managed. My sisters, you know, have children. I do not. Yeah, they each have two children. I have a niece and nephews and four godchildren. I did have some stepchildren, but I decided when we divorced and parted ways, it was best to sever the relationship with the stepchildren when we lost contact via email and phone numbers change. I needed to separate from their father. And not that he was mean, or I needed the relationship to end so that the door would be closed. You know, and the children many times kept the door open. Yeah, so, I'm very satisfied with that. Yeah. So that's a little off from my relationship with my siblings, but it was, my sister, they love me, and very, like they would take a bullet, like really for me, and I for them, but they were just so protective and so proud of anything that I did. And if you said something about one of us, it was like you talked about, what did she say to you? No, she didn't. And this, that didn't really reveal itself until we were adults. My older sister, the one who passed, Denise, she wasn't as forgiving of other people when they misstepped, when they did something that she thought was unforgiving to one of us. She would make a point of saying that she did not, she said, yeah, I understand you forgave them. Okay, I didn't. Now what? So I'm not going over there. I remember what she said to you. So they were very, my sisters were and are very protective of me. I tend to be more forgiving for my own best interests, because to not, it's not healthy. You know, it's like resentment. It's a cancer. And I won't let anyone steal my joy because I'm pissed off at you. You are not that important to Darlene. But I do understand that that was and is the way in which they showed me that they loved me. I would always encourage them, you don't need to do that for me. Yeah, it would be in your own best interest to let that go. So, there you are. But I have other sisters who are not blood sisters, and they're not Sterling's mom, because that's a new friendship. But I have friends that I have known for over 40 years, and they are like sisters. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they are like sisters, and we laugh. Oh my goodness, we laugh, and we tell each other the truth, and we cry, and we just hold each other up. One of my dear friends, her father died March the 1st of 2017, and that and my sister died March the 21st. So within that month, one best friend's father died and my sister died. And it was our relationship that kept us both where we could manage the grief in the beginning, because we talked on the phone every single morning on my way to work. She would be at work already, and I would talk to her on the way to work. And we would laugh about silly stuff and discuss, you know, what was happening with family members. But those types of relationships are the ones that I hold dear. And I feel blessed that I have several of them, you know, where women friends who are just dear. And I think for me, they've always been different from the relationships that I've had with men. Although romantically involved, I hold dear the way in which that women commune and how we support each other. And I think that they, and I say this with some caution, but I think that they can, if not, do carry equal weight. Different types of relationships that provide different types of support, but I wouldn't say that one is better than the other. And there is no hierarchy for me. Like, my husband and my best friend. No, these women friends, they have been supportive when there wasn't a mate, because it's just what women do. You know, we hold each other up, and, you know, we'll listen to, you know, the same story over and over and over again and laugh like it's the first damn time that we've heard it. And that's a blessing to be able to do that. So, yeah, if I had to write a story, tell a story, it would be that I feel honored and blessed to have had people who love me deeply, and people whom have allowed me to love them and their children deeply, and consider me a part of their immediate family. So much so that all of my dear friends have hot sauce at their homes for me. Like, that's godmother's hot sauce. Okay, you know when she comes, she needs hot sauce. And that wine over there, don't open it because that's hers. That's love. Hot sauce and wine. So there you have it, Mary.
I'm really moved by your discussion of your sisters and that expansive understanding of sisterhood, mm-hmm. which is both biologically based and expands beyond that. Could you share a story of when one of your sister friends was really there for you? You do a nice definition of what that means, but do you have a story?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. And this story I probably tell a lot, but I'm going to definitely share with you now so they can be formally documented. And I will be certain to call this sister friend and tell her this is the story I told. So my mom passed away in 1988, and I was 28 years old, living on my own. And one of my best friends, she had moved back to New York, but she was living in New York temporarily, and she was scheduled to move to Maryland with her then fiance. And she knew my mom, and so this is the relationship that I have with most people. So there's a Darlene who's very strong, handles things, you know, goes in deep. But if you are my friend and I trust that you can handle me being human, meaning that I can be vulnerable and I can have a moment, then we are really friends. And so the women that I call friends, they have that kind of relationship with me. But this particular friend, she was scheduled to move to Maryland, and my mom had just passed, and this was in August, and she was supposed to move in September. And I remember saying to her, could you please stay? And she stayed a whole year. She sent her son to Maryland with the fiance, his stepfather. And she just, every other weekend, she would drive to Maryland. She stayed a whole year with me, a whole year. And we lived across from each other. In the, so I can go out on my terrace and see her on her terrace. But and the funny thing is, she has MS now. So she says she doesn't remember the story. But I remind her, that's a friend. She rearranged her life to stay in New York because she was my, what is the phrase that they use? She was my person that I didn't have to manage shit, you know. I can just have a moment. And I knew it was a big ask. But she said, okay, she stayed. And I can't tell that story to anybody and not cry. Because who does that? Somebody has got to love you in a deep, special way that they would make that kind of change. And sent her son, my godson, who happens to be the eldest godson, who says he is the eldest godson, who has a problem with the other godchildren because his godmother should only have him. But she sent this child with his stepfather to Maryland. And she, every other weekend, she either drove down or they came up. But she stayed in New York an additional year so that she could be supportive and help me move through the grief, because it was just, it was my first real experience with losing someone. And so it has made me very compassionate about supporting people who have family members who have passed. But also, it really makes me, I know what true friendship is. Yeah. So, yeah, that's my sister friend, Melissa. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, that's one that should definitely go down in the records. She stayed. And it warms my heart.
Tell me more about that friendship. How did you meet? How did the friendship develop?
Oh, we went to high school together. So we met when we were 14. And she went into the service. When we got out of high school, I went away to Adelphi University. She got married, came back to New York. I became the godmother of her son at the time, and we just stayed in touch. And it was such, it was a relationship where we didn't need to talk to each other every day when she was out of state. You know, whenever she called or I would call her, we would just pick up from wherever we left off. And yeah, so yeah, she'll be 59 in July, and I'm 59 now. So we're talking about a long time that we have been supportive and there for each other. Periodically, I go to Maryland. If she's having an episode where she's out of work, then I'll go down and, you know, I like to cook, so I go and I cook, and, you know, she's lying in bed, I'm in the chase chair, and we're talking trash into the night. Then I go into the guest room, and I sleep. And then in the morning, I run into the bed, because we act like children. I jump into the bed, or she'll come into the bedroom where I am, and she'll blow in my ear. You know, we do. Yeah. And one would think that there is some romantic connection, but I think that is the nature of how women communicate, you know, that we love each other deeply, you know. And I don't think that men love each other or love other men and when it's not romantic, in the same way that women who are platonic love one each other. Because it's just, and I don't know if it's, I don't think it's something that's, I think we're socialized that way, as opposed to it being something that we're born with. I don't believe that. I think that, you know, if men are socialized to be thoughtful and loving and supportive in that way, then they would too, but they are not for the most part. So because we are, then that tends to be the way in which that we we manage and maneuver through our relationships with each other. But yeah, she has, we have been in each other's lives for a long time. Yeah. In fact, I got a text from, pictures from her grandson's confirmation today. Yes, he's Catholic. He's Catholic. She grew up Catholic. She's not Catholic now. Mother has been every religion under the sun. Yeah. So I said, okay, Godmother's not coming down. She's going away for 10 days.
How have your relationships with women been different from your relationships with men?
Sometimes, well, the ones that are platonic, let's just stick with, because of course when they're romantic, it's different. But with men, good question. I'm just trying to think of some of the platonic relationships always had with men always had that undercurrent that it could go another way, you know, and sometimes that was good when I was young and other times it was annoying because I don't want a romantic relationship with you. I just want to be your friend. But I find that sometimes men always want to test the waters. Can this be something else? No, I'm just your friend. But I do have some male friends who I hold dear. And one friend in particular just stands out in my mind. I have not seen him in years, but he was just so loving and so thoughtful and so protective. Always felt safe physically, emotionally in his care. And I don't have as many platonic relationships with men as I do with women, but there are some, and they are different in that I'm mindful that men don't always have the same socialization where they can absorb some of the redundancies that go on with women. Like, I'm not comfortable saying or telling a story 25 times to a male friend. Sometimes I'm very conscious that I might be quote unquote rambling, but I don't have any qualms about going on and on and on and on when it's a sister friend. Yeah. So that's one of the differences that I'm conscious of it because, yeah. And how I interact with them is different. Not bad, but different. Yeah. But my preference, in terms of if I had to choose a gender to be platonically connected to, definitely women. Yeah. Yeah. Girl power, woman power. Yeah. Definitely women. Yeah. And I'm okay with that.
We have about 10 minutes left. Is there anything that you are thinking that you'd like to share before I ask another question?
Oh, yes, indeed. So, I guess I would like to share where I am now at this juncture in my life. Recently retired. And it's probably a good way to end. Yeah. Recently retired, 37 years of, you know, working with children and adults and their parents and ending this chapter, this cycle of my life with satisfaction that I did some serious work and really clear that it's time to do something else. So when I left when I left my job or when I The last day of school, last year, June, one of the things I said to the staff was I wanted to take some time to rest, to just physically, mentally, emotionally rest, to reflect on what has transpired, not just throughout my career, but the last year and a half, having had to deal with the death of my sister and the death of my best friend's father. So I knew I needed to rest and reflect. But then I wanted to retool and then get started again, to just restart something else. And for a long time this year, I was clear that I was getting a lot of rest. Although I was busy, but I was resting. I was reflecting and thinking about what the next round, the next level, the next chapter, what would that work look like? And I've thought about a lot of different things. But most recently, I said to Suzanne, I think this is it. I think that this sharing of experiences, documenting it, that this might be the thing that I'm going to go out on. I am overwhelmed with excitement as to what that looks like, particularly doing something with family members and friends, giving people that I love and people that I know and don't know an opportunity to tell a story, to be a part of the sharing of their legacy, and particularly with seniors and women, more so, who want to say something to their family members, to their children, and just to the world. What does that look like? And I think for Black women, older Black women who have not had an opportunity to tell their story, whatever that story is, because I want to work with people who are not famous, but ordinary people, to show the complexities of just being ordinary and sometimes poor, but ordinary, but complicated, and a story to tell. So I'm just excited about what does that look like now that I'm gaining this insight and really leaning towards it. This will be the work. This will be the work that I will do, that it will be around storytelling. And I'm looking forward to that. Yeah, looking forward to that. So retirement has been good. This has been a good year. And this particular summer school, this period right here, it's been exceptionally good. We'll say this again, probably at the end of the session. I'm sure Suzanne will give us all an opportunity to speak, but I've been so impressed with the young women that I've met this week who are so clear about their commitment to struggle and struggle in, or, and maybe struggle is probably something we need to relanguage, but their commitment to moving the culture and whatever the culture is for that individual on, the sincerity, the clarity of being on purpose for doing a particular work is very, it's exciting. And one of the things that I said a lot in the last couple of years as I was getting ready to retire, I want to work with smart people. I want to be with people who are committed to doing work and people who love their work. Well, if this is anything like what is to come, just this past 3 days, I'm overjoyed. So it's a good time for me now, even in the midst of challenges and grief and, getting ready for something else. I'm overjoyed. And this group of young women, varying ages too, with all of these very different interests. Yeah, it's exciting. It's a good time to be alive. It's a good time to be Darlene.
As a final question to just follow up on that, when you dream of a project, of collecting stories, of working with Black women, what are you hoping to uncover in those stories? What are you hoping to share with women? What are you hoping to bring into the world?
I think I'm not absolutely certain, but I think I just want to give voice to people who have not had a voice. And one of the things that I've learned in just this short period of time is that I don't get to dictate what that is, but to be able to put the mic in front of someone and say, what's your story? What do you have to say? It can go in any direction, as it has in this conversation, this interview, that it just started up, down, right, left. And I know I'm not unique in that way, that there are, we all have a story. Yeah, and so we need someone who will quietly listen, affirming that we have a right to tell our story. And so I want to support those women whom may not be normally given an opportunity to say, "Oh, I know you have a story. So what do you want to say?" So I don't really know. I just want to become really good at providing women with a platform to tell the story, and then to be able to give them their story so that they can have it to share with their families. And if people go and listen to it in some other form, that would be great. But to just to be able to offer up the gift of, here is the documentation or documented story that you have shared. Yeah, that's what I'd want to be able to do, to gift women with their own stories documented on a flash drive.
Darlene, thank you so much for sharing some of your stories with me today.
Thank you.